You're watching Network Radio. Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where my very special guest is an expert on assassins and assassinations. He's published a brilliant study of the murder of Olof Palme, the former prime minister of Sweden, coup d'etat in slow motion, available from Moonrock Books. His name, Ole Damgaard. Ole, it's just terrific to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's a real pleasure and honor.
I know you've been doing a lot of interviews about the Paris fiasco, perhaps a good way to describe it. I'd like for you to tell us what your research into this event has revealed.
Well, for people who don't know me, I devoted about 30 years of my life into trying to really expose what is going on in the world when it comes to top-level assassinations and so-called terror acts. I used to think that they were all separate events, but over the years I've come to see that they are so connected, so connected, more and more and more. And also one of the ways that they, one of the methods that they push forward their very brutal agenda is what is called so-called false flag operations. That is an old, I'm sure your audience know it, but it's an old naval term. That comes from the old days when, for instance, a nation wanted to invade and crush some enemy territory. But if they did that, maybe they would have problems with their neighboring countries and so on. So what they did instead was they put the enemy's flag on one of their own ships, then let that ship attack themselves, and then they were then the victim, and that then would justify their go in, rape, plunder, destroy, whatever. And they would even become the hero from this. And this is an old Roman template as well, problem, reaction, solution, where the people in power secretly create a problem to get an emotional reaction from the population. They want it emotional because that is when you don't use your brain, you just go for the emotions. And then when people are totally in fear, they turn towards the people that they think are there to protect and guide them, not understanding that they're actually the ones who caused the problem, and saying, please, please help us. We need protection. And then they will serve you the solution. And that solution every single time is something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem.
Another example, by the way, of the false flag technique was pirates who would fly the flag of a friendly nation as they approached the target vessel they wanted to capture, and only when they got in close proximity would they take it down and run up the skull and bones to identify themselves. Hence, false flag is a form of deception to put themselves in a position for an attack, just as you have described. Ole, tell us more about Paris. What first drew your attention to the prospect that something might be wrong?
It's a really good point you made that with the pirates. Thank you for that one. In early 2015, Charlie Hebdo happened, and then there was the Copenhagen shooting and so on. And it's been going on different operations globally. But when the Charlie Hebdo happened, I was informed and given different inside source material, making me available to expose publicly that the Copenhagen shooting was going to happen, where it was going to happen, very close to a train station. And then I thought it was going to happen in January, but instead, maybe because I exposed it, it was carried out in February instead. Both of them very connected, both of them super false flag black ops. So this fall, it feels like the people or the power structure behind the so-called New World Order, they've really tried to stir it up big time, big time. And I've had a feeling that they would try to create like a Wagner crescendo here with everything coming together at the same time, just creating mass hysteria. And then in that situation with lots of false flags and invasion of refugees and so on, in that situation, get the effect from the population saying, oh my God, we need protection. And that would be where they would go in with martial law in multiple countries at the same time. And that would then be the step, a major step forward for them to the New World Order. Total control on all levels. So I thought first that it was going to happen in September with the ending of Jade Helm 15 and with all the big NATO exercises. But that one, they didn't manage to pull off. Also, there was on the 23rd of September, they were waiting, you know, that the financial collapse, that didn't happen either. But then on the 11th of November, there was a major drill in Copenhagen. These last false flags in January was Paris and Copenhagen. Here was Copenhagen on the 11th, and there was a major big drill at the university in Copenhagen where the theme was a mass shooting, which it's never happened in Denmark or Sweden before. So it was quite unusual. And guess what? They actually used the Swedish police as terrorists in this big exercise.
They used the Swedish police as the terrorists. Well, maybe there's some truth in advertising there, Ollie.
But I tell you, they had like 200 crisis actors there. 50 was supposed to be wounded and 150 just for the whole play. And I had people on location filming and being there because I said, please, please, that's what I always advise people. When you hear about a drill, since that is essential for false flag operations, go there and film them while they even do the setup of the whole thing. It will look like a film set and so on, but make it very, very obvious to the people doing it that they are being observed and they are being filmed. And maybe if this drill is not for a security thing, but for a false flag, then by filming them before it even happens, that is a possible way of diffusing a future massacre and so on. So I humbly believe that I managed to expose two planned false flag operations in this way. So anyway, I had people on the ground in Denmark filming this. And also at the same time, there was a major drill planned outside the coast of Denmark where there were multiple military services involved and so on. And the theme there was that there were two vessels colliding, one of them with atomic waste or an atomic driven engine, so that we would have an atomic disaster there. Well, nothing happened. The drill went off and it was filmed. Nothing happened. So I thought, thank God I was wrong this time. But just a little thing. Do you know when they came out with the terrorists that they said had done the mass shooting in this drill in Copenhagen, they had tinfoil on their heads, you know, tin, like really screwed on like tinfoil hats.
Literally.
One in silver foil and one in gold foil, exactly the same gold foil that we then see in Paris 2 days later. And I think that was for one to make a joke with us and ridicule people like myself. But also, these things are very often on a psyop level as well. They're multi-layered and aimed at persuading our subconscious into believing what they want us to believe, not the real truth. So then, 2 days later, I was not prepared for that one. Then, boom, it happened in Paris instead. And I thought, since they very often, if not always, choose very specific dates, like Veterans Day, Patriots Day, Poppy Day, Valentine, or whatever, then I thought 11/11 would be the day. That was the day it was planned in Denmark. But here instead it was Friday the 13th, which is even more symbolic and connected with Freemasonry numerology, also the date of a massacre of Knights of the Templar Order and so on. And so right away when it happened on Friday the 13th, I was like, whoa, now it's very important not to scream false flag just because something happens. You really need to look into the evidence and see what actually happened and what did not happen. Because often the signs of a black op is by the things that do not happen, things that normally work perfectly, but then suddenly cameras doesn't work, all the surveillance equipment that they've spent billions to install, no, very sorry, it stopped working just 5 minutes before, normal police were not there, and so on and so on. So I've been trying to follow this event as closely as possible, but it was like, as soon as it happened, I had like 20 invitations over Skype for interviews, and people on Facebook all over the world has been contacting me, and so on. So it's been nonstop. Because this one, I would very much like to suggest, is yet another one in these awful events.
Yet another false flag.
Yeah. So that is very easy to say, but let's see if I can put forward some evidence that might persuade your listeners and so on to see that there might be truth behind what I said. Now, if we start at the stadium, this was a multiple attack event during, I think it was 33 minutes. Here we go with the numerology again. Over 33 minutes, there were multiple attacks done, carried out in the center of Paris. Now, the attacks was against a big football stadium, soccer stadium, where there was a match, France against Germany, and where the French president was there and his colleague from Germany. Both of them were attending the game. Then it was in very close to the Charlie Hebdo event, and in a popular area, actually Police District 11, also including Police District 10. We have these numerologies. I'm just pointing them out. I'm not saying that all of them might mean anything, just pointing them out. There were several small cafes, a pizzeria, and then there was a big music theater, like a concert hall, called Bataclan. And in there it said that four gunmen went in, started shooting, took hostages, killed 80 people, and then decided to blow themselves up. So to start with, it was said that 7 of 8 attackers blew themselves up with explosives and so on. So we start and we look at what actually happened. Now, at the stadium, it is said it was this game, France-Germany, and the whole game was on, and then suddenly an explosion was heard. Then a few minutes later, almost 10 minutes later, there was another explosion, it said. And you can see the players are playing around there, almost stops, but the game continues until the end, where it's reported that, oh, there's been an attack, and so the game is stopped. And instead of letting the people out from the stadium, they're kept inside the stadium for a long time. One of the things when it comes to black ops is that the cell phone network and normal phone network is normally shut off for a certain amount of time. I would suggest, because the people behind these operations need to control the information getting out, so that they are totally sure that it's their version of the so-called truth that gets out there. It happened when JFK was assassinated. It was the whole national phone system in the U.S. went down for almost 1 hour. And it said that, oh, it was because everybody was trying to call each other saying, have you heard what happened, and so on. I would totally disagree. because it also happened at 9/11, the 7/7 bombings in London, the Madrid bombings when MS Estonia went down, and so on and so on. So here we have in the football stadium, I've heard from people in direct in there that the phones didn't work, and so on. You will also see that there's a total lack of photos and film videos from people inside the stadium. An absolute, there's zero, zero, zero. Then you have the suicide bombers. There's two people that are said to have blown themselves up outside the stadium. The reason why they were on the outside was because they forgot to buy a ticket. That's a bit of a bummer when you are a suicide bomber. And then the security turned them away. One of them is said to have won, but he apparently joined his fellow suicide bomber. And so they decided to blow themselves up outside. I tell you, if you have been to war zones, I have. If you've seen somebody hit by a mortar, grenade, or some kind of explosive, or a suicide bomber, it is greasy. It is awful. You will find hair, brain, intestines, body parts, teeth spread in a big area, and a lot of fluid, you know, like body fluids, blood, so on, greasy. Here we have zero, there are no photos, no evidence of any explosions on the outside. Also, all of these thousands of people coming out from the stadium, why did not one single one take a photo of that? Why did they not try and go there and gather around where the explosion had been? Why did it take almost 10 minutes between the explosions and so on? So my theory is that these explosions did not occur, but it was explosions just where the audio was heard over the PA system. Now, nowadays, especially in the U.S., I don't know if you're aware of it, but you have digitally added crowd noise on the big games. Even when the teams are practicing and training, you got an empty stadium, but you got the sound of the crowd. And to amplify the ambience of the game and so on. So I would suggest very possibly this sound only came via the PA system, that it was a sound heard, nothing else, no explosions. Then you have the François Hollande, the president of France, who was sitting there, exactly like when George Bush Jr. was informed about 9/11. His advisors come and whispers in his ears. He does not look frightened. He does not look upset. He just keeps sitting there listening to these children reading about a little goat. Here, François Hollande, there's a photographer, professional photographer, taking close-up photos of this when it happens. And the advisor comes, whispers in his ears, there are two suicide bombers that just blew themselves up outside the stadium. He does not even look surprised. He looks very calm. And then he's led out from where he's seated together with his colleague. But instead of having bodyguards all around him, total security, the lockdown of the stadium, whatever, because, I mean, what are the chances that there's not more suicide bombers on the inside? I mean, maybe some of them remembered their ticket and were actually on the inside. No, but instead, because of this awful threat of terror, he goes up into the booth where all the commentators are sitting. This is a glassed-in area with windows, so he's visible for the whole stadium, and that is where you can see him having a mobile phone call. Totally open for an attack, totally open for whatever. And by the way, he was on the phone with Obama the very same morning when this happened. So also you have nowadays, to give credibility, you very often have celebrities that was on site or had their relatives on site or something like that. And here we have, I was waiting to see who's going to be this time. Geraldo Rivera's daughter was said to be inside first the concert hall, but then it was at the football stadium. And she mentioned three explosions. There were two. He also said they started to leave. They were not allowed to leave. And he said they saw SWAT team and emergency crowds coming in. There was no such thing. Then he said that she saw them, the crowds pouring out from another exit, and it was total chaos. Absolutely not, because the whole thing has been filmed. But what was filmed, very odd, the whole thing, because when you see the camera sweep around, the whole stadium is down on the grass and so on, walking around, nobody is taking photos. You see people that seemingly are making phone calls, but nobody is filming, not that I've seen it at least, nobody's taking photos, and there are no photos from the inside at all. So there's so many things around this that is odd, and I don't know. Was that part of a mass drill? Was this filmed before? I don't know.
Only it sounds to me like it was Geraldo's daughter who was purportedly in the stadium. It sounds to me like this phone call is rather like Barbara Olson calling from Flight 77 to her husband Ted when it was impossible for calls to be made by cell phones at those speeds and altitudes, and where Boeing did not even have airphones in 757s in 2001. It sounds to me equally contrived.
It's the thing is that she did not make a phone call there. She made, I did not get, understand it like that, but he said that he had been in touch with her afterwards, and she told him about these things. But I would put a big question mark around that one. Also, it's quite interesting because if you watch this video footage of the game going on and then boom, you can hear the first explosion go on. If you look up to the left corner, in the left corner of this film, there is on the sides of the football pitch, is that what you call it? You have these boards where you got commercials.
Yeah.
Says Coca-Cola, and these are digital nowadays, so they change images and so on. But right before the bomb goes off, but it comes on just a few seconds before the bomb goes off, you will see the German flag, and then it says Wir alle zusammen, which means we're all together with the German flag. Then boom, and when the boom goes off, it fades into like white, yellow, orange, almost like an explosion, and then it goes up over to a normal
football team. That's very perceptive, only to pick up on that.
But since these are psyops, you know, this is the thing, they need to get us in the mindset that their actions are justified. So they will use all these different types to get to your subconscious so that you will say, yeah, let's go and bomb the living bejesus out of Syria or whatever it is they want. So that is why when I look at these things, you need to sit there with an amplifier, what do you call it? One of these Sherlock Holmes things.
Magnifying glass.
Magnifying glass, every centimeter of every single photo, of every single angle, and so on. So, anyway.
Meanwhile, there are multiple other events taking place throughout Paris.
Yeah, and I just want to point out also that very often these things occur on a Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and so on. I would suggest that is to be able to shut down the stock market. They say out of respect for the mourning families, we will get the flag down on half and then close the stock market. But that is where they do the insider trading. That's where they make their billions, because there's a lot of, when you know about these things before they happen, that you can make absolute billions. And this gives them 3 days to lock the currencies, to do all of this, and also clean up their traces, And then Monday morning when it opens up, nobody will notice what actually happened. When JFK was murdered, it was a super high thing at the stock market. People made absolute fortunes. When the Swedish Prime Minister was killed, it was almost the all-time high of the Swedish stock market. So what seems like a tragedy to some people is an absolute gold mine for others. And here we have again, Friday, boom, it closed. They said, we're going to have 3 days of mourning. I would say, yeah, right. That is what you're going to do, mourn for the next 3 days. I would very much like for people to check out what was going on in the stock market this day. So another thing when it comes to false flags and black ops and so on is that it's almost like they put out a film trailer beforehand to warn us, not to warn us, but to show us what's going to happen. And I've been told from people who are on the inside, they say that the people in the so-called elite, they've named themselves the elite, I call them the likeless, the minority, but that the law of karma, they're very aware of that. And according to them, if you warn your victim, if you show what's going to happen to them and they do not react, then that takes the karma off the shoulders of the assassin or the attacker and puts it right on the victim itself. There are so many of these major operations like 9/11, all of them, when you go back and look 1 year before in great detail or 1 month before or whatever it is, boom, it's right there in your face and you don't react, and then it happens.
And the Economist magazine, published in January, had this very odd little scenario in the lower right with a couple of arrows with dates, a picture of Alice in Wonderland, a painting that looks a lot like the Mona Lisa, but is also of in the Louvre or in Paris. So it looks as though they were telegraphing there through that Rothschild magazine what was going to take place in Paris on 11/15/2015.
Yeah, that cover is really creepy. When you see how they operate, that cover is something else, I tell you. Ooh. But I actually spoke to Chip Tatum, who's a CIA whistleblower and a former assassin who worked directly under George Bush Sr. They took out at least 17 people in Europe and so on. And I asked him about this karma theory, and he said he never heard of it before, but he said that they always had to go and approach the victim before they took him out. He said they had to go there and verbally give him the chance to conform, the way he pronounced it. And if the victim to become did not conform, then they were free to take him out. And Chip said he was always very uncomfortable with that because it's very dangerous. He said, I'm a soldier. If you want him dead, let me take him out. But to approach him like that, that is so dangerous. But he said, after hearing this, it suddenly makes sense. So anyway, so we see if there's any signs of anybody knowing this thing before it happened. Now, there's one Twitter account that is called FC Books. And it tweeted 2 days before it actually happened, on the exact same day as the drill was in Denmark. It said, breaking, death toll from Paris terror attack rises from at least 120 to 270 injured. Now, that's 2 days before it happened. Now, the exact same Twitter message was sent out from that account just before the Peshawar school massacre on the 14th of December 2014, with the exact same numbers. It said death toll from Peshawar school massacre rises to at least 120 with 270 others injured. And when the Ebola big hoax thing was in the middle of the whole, was ongoing, there was a tweet coming from this same account called death toll in Ebola outbreak rises to at least 120 with 270 others injured. Very, very odd, to say the least. I have not been able to find out what this FCZ book account is. It's said to be a Twitter bot, but I'm not really sure how that works and how this is possible, but I would say
the improbability of those two numbers coinciding is infinitesimal. I mean, it's approximately zero.
And we're back to this Freemasonry, really satanic, very odd things that happen around these events. It's recurring again and again. Then also, I found a YouTube account called Videos Paris Attack Exclusively. And that account was created on November the 12th. That's 1 day before it happened. There are no videos in there. But when I and other people started checking it out, that whole account was removed. It just disappeared. And also, that was that. Then you have Wikipedia. Do you remember Fletcher Prouty when he was on New Zealand when JFK was killed? He was in, and he picked up Fletcher Prouty is a former very, very high up in the CIA and Pentagon, very involved in black ops and so on, that later turned into a whistleblower and spent his whole life doing incredible work showing how these things were carried out. But he, you can see that in the JFK movie as well. He was on New Zealand where when JFK was killed, and he picked out, I think it was the Christchurch News.
Christchurch Star.
Star, where they had the whole thing about the JFK assassination, the whole thing, the bio of all the history about Lee Harvey Oswald and so on. And this was even before he was arrested in Dallas. Okay, and that's right.
There's no possible way that information could have been known had the official story been true, had it not been planted in advance.
Exactly, and that Fletcher said, at that very second, I knew it was a black op. I knew it was a black op. That's his exact words. So here we have Wikipedia. Less than 2 hours after the first bomb explosion, it had a complete web page about the event with the exact numbers of wounded, with the whole thing, all the different locations and so on. I mean, this is good journalistic work, I tell you, because it was before anyone really knew. And then also it included what the president's speech was about. Now, this was, we've been able to backtrack this. So it was published 11.06 p.m., but the presidential speech was 11.58 a.m. So whoever it was almost 50 minutes before it actually happened. I would say major, major alert for a black op here.
Also like Jane Stanley of the BBC announcing the collapse of Building 7 23 minutes before that would occur, where you can see the building standing behind her in the television screen.
This is the thing. This is that once you start seeing how these things work and how difficult they are to carry out, I mean, to keep a timeline, especially when there are different time zones involved and so on, not easy. I don't envy these people, but it's also these things that mess it up, and it's wonderful for someone like myself. For instance, you had, after this whole thing happened and the whole world was, oh my God, we have to mourn with Paris and the victims. There were all of these building lit up with the French flag, you know, blue, white, and red. And according to Kerry Cassidy at Project Camelot, the lighting of the Wembley Stadium in London, that went on 1 hour before it actually happened in Paris. There's 1 hour time difference between London and Paris. And the Wembley was lit up before it actually occurred. So it was quickly...
In blue, white, and red.
Yeah. And then it was turned off. Somebody messed up, you know, or somebody trying to warn, you know, maybe it was somebody, some good-hearted person that said, my God, I need to warn the world. I don't know, but the light went on before it happened.
It would have been too obscure a warning with no specificity about what was going to happen or where, just the colors of France.
The colors of France. Then another thing that is always there, when there are these false flag operations, is the drill. The drill, the drill, the drill. There's always a drill there. And I would suggest the drill is there so that the people behind these operations can, in quiet and peace, get their vehicles in position, explosives in position, smoke machines, crisis actors, get lure the patsy in position so he can be taken down, and so on. So it will give them possibility to close off streets and close off big areas of the town without any normal person getting involved, because, no, it's a drill for my security, so I should just be happy. And so the question is, was there a drill in Paris this day? The answer is yes. There was a major multi-site exercise planned and carried out this morning. There were people observed, loads and loads of ambulances in the center of Paris. And I love when you see these events being played out. I always try to see the key characters in these dramas. Who are they? track them down. Do I recognize them? Have they taken part of other similar events and so on? Because they often use the same people again and again. So there was an interview on French local radio about this SAMU exercise. A man called Patrick Pelou, he's a specialist in emergency medical services, and he said that thank God there was this exercise going on, because that made it so much easier for them to go out and save valuable lives. Okay, Patrick Pelou, who are you? So I started tracking this guy down, and it turned out that in 2011, he was outside the Charlie Hebdo building when that was turned on fire. Then he started working for Charlie Hebdo, also being, I don't know what he was doing there as a medical emergency specialist, but he was working with Charlie Hebdo for this magazine. Then on January 7, when Charlie Hebdo, the shootings started, he was in a meeting with first responders, very conveniently, ambulance services and fire brigade, in that meeting when he received a phone call. Now, the phone call was from one of his colleagues at the Charlie Hebdo office. His friend there said, please, we're being murdered here, come. So Patrick Pelou was one of the absolute first people who entered the building after the shooting had occurred, the so-called shooting. And he ran in there, and he said it was absolutely awful, but he managed to save some lives and so on. And then he picked up his mobile and called the French Prime Minister. Jim, what are the chances of you having that number in your cell phone?
Or the French Prime Minister being available to answer it.
There as well. I mean, but anyway, he informed what was going on, and that started the whole rescue apparatus and so on. And then he was on TV, crying, telling the story about how awful it was and so on. I'm not being disrespectful to victims and so on in Paris. The thing is that there weren't any, as far as I've been able to find out. So that was a massive big hoax. And by the way, the police officer that was shot on the pavement by these two terrorists, he's well and happy living in Brazil. I've got the inside information where he's living and what he's doing and so on. So maybe we should say hello to him.
Very nice.
Anyway, so also, since he was very good, this Patrick Pelou, at crying and expressing emotions on TV, I checked him out. And by any chance, has he done anything with acting? And yes, he was the nurse in the 2009 film Incognito. And he was also playing the doctor in the film Bad Girl from 2012. So here we have a very central figure in all of these events, who are both in the drill and who's an actor and who's the guy on TV and radio expressing all of these things.
Now, with Charlie Hebdo, of course, they made a big deal of an attack on a Jewish delicatessen, to underline the idea that there was supposed to be an anti-Semitic dimension to this. I understand the owners of the concert hall a Jewish family had owned it for some 40 years, and only shortly before did they part. I mean, there are a lot of oddities here, are there not?
Yeah, the Bataclan Theater was sold 2 months before it happened. It was two Jewish brothers called Joan and Pascal Lalou, who, after they sold it, went to Israel. And as far as I've been able to find out, the buyer is an investment firm called Lagardère, whose largest partner is Qatar Holdings. And this Qatar Holdings, I've been informed, have been known to finance terror activities before. I checked this with Scott Bennett. I was on a show together with him. He's a former U.S. Intelligence, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. He's got a career that is incredible.
Yeah, he's a former Army intelligence officer, yeah.
Yeah. And his speciality in the military services was to track down funding of terrorist activities. And I asked him especially about this company, and he said, I'm not allowed to say anything openly because signed some agreements, but he said, you're dead on track. You're right on track. Okay. Because when you look at these operations, I would suggest that the people who carry them out on the street level. I'm talking about the shooters. These are military people from the Gladio network or from the Israeli army, cold killers, very skilled, very disciplined and so on. But the financing of this comes often from very different directions, hard to track down. And this, one of the places that keeps popping up is Qatar. And when I mentioned this company, he said, you're right on track.
Oli, now I understand that even the band, this Eagles of Death Metal, actually is an Israeli band, that its manager is Jewish, and that they returned to Israel after the event.
I wouldn't know. I would not know. But I know that there's all these satanic things around this event, and here we have the singer is called the Devil. That's his nickname. And I think the song that they were the song that they were just playing was anthem to the devil or something like that, tribute to the devil.
By pure coincidence, of course, Oli.
Of course.
And I have seen a photograph of the inside of the concert hall where there are what appear to be bodies lying around, but the blood looks like it's been put down with a mop. And I know you have comments on that, but also on another photograph, which is truly stunning. Please tell us more.
Okay. The official story is that four shooters entered this. The concert was ongoing, and there was about it was sold out. So there was about 1,000 to 1,500 people in there. That is a lot of people. Then four suicide bombers went in there, started shooting, and witnesses and other people said they shot for 10 to 15 minutes. They kept reloading, and they kept saying also Kalashnikovs. They had Kalashnikovs, which to the subconscious saying Muslim terrorist, because why keep repeating the word Kalashnikov? Most people wouldn't see the weapon, they wouldn't recognize it, but this is every single interview you hear with witnesses. They keep repeating Kalashnikov, Kalashnikov.
And of course, I mean an AK-47s.
AK-47.
One of the most reliable automatic weapons ever designed by the hand of man, by the way. It'll keep working even if it's been exposed to sand or mud or water. I mean, it's a very reliable weapon.
Extremely reliable. And Scott Bennett, he said, the thing is with these weapons, when you shoot somebody, there's a hole the size of a tennis ball. I mean, this is heavy stuff that they do to a body. But here you have, there's absolutely no impact there. You have a photo on the inside where there's 25 bodies spread out on the floor. There's absolutely no one else there. There's no EMTs, there's no police, there's no ambulance personnel. Nobody has tried to help them. Nobody has tried to cover them up. All of them are dead. There's only 25, where the other 55? And by the way, suicide bombers are said to have blown themselves up inside there as well, it should have looked like a total massacre. But here instead we have that the blood, where they're actually lying on top, have been spread out like with a giant brush. And when you look at it, some people say it's in the shape of the Egyptian eye. But I would say it's actually in a heart shape around it, around the bodies.
A heart shape, it is.
I think it is,
Ole. That's very peculiar.
I think it's so bizarre. But then again, you have the PSYOP with Paris, romance in Paris, let's go, spring in Paris, it's so romantic, Champs-Élysées and so on. And here, is that what they're doing?
Looking at it right now, and it's very much like a heart. And there are two parts to the sides of the heart, but it's elaborate. You got one stack of body in one side of the heart, another stack of body in the other side of the heart. How bizarre.
And people say, yeah, but that was when they tried to pull out the victims. And well, in that case, the victim would have to weigh like 800 pounds because the width of the blood trail is very even. And also underneath some of the bodies. So that has been done first, and then some of the bodies have been laid on top.
Nice point, Oli. You're exactly right.
I would very much doubt this photo. I would also say if you have the control of this building for 2 months beforehand, is it possible that these photos were not taken afterwards but before? You will see also up in the where the seats are, the seats on the side, you can see, I think, 5 or 6 people standing there, but they've been blacked out. You can just see some are standing there. It's very odd. Oh. And also the floor, if you look inside, there's other shots from this concert hall and so on. It's a very beautiful wood floor. It looks wooden, at least. But here, it's like concrete, or that they're lying right on concrete, or something has been spread out that they're lying on. I would say maybe not to mess up the floor and so on.
Ole, I know you've also seen a photograph allegedly taken at the Bataclan moments before the Paris shootings. Could you tell us about this remarkable find?
Yeah, I think I don't know if anyone noticed it, but this one is just too much. I think it's today it's been published, a photo from the inside, and it said it's taken just minutes before the shooting started. But when you look at it, I mean, I worked with Photoshop for like 15 years. I love it. And I know how hard it is to do something. I also know how the mistakes to look out for and so on, how you, what it looks like when you Photoshop something and like this. And this photo, it's taken from the stage. It looks like straight out into the crowd. It is so bad. It is like a Sgt. Pepper Lonely Heart Club Band
cover.
composite of I don't know how many different layers. You can see the faces doesn't really fit in. There's loads of arms doing this satanic symbol with the horns. Arms are in totally the wrong place. There's no shadows where there should be. Some of it is very pixelated. Some faces are very sharp contrast. Other ones are very faded. The size of it's a massive, not very well done job. If I'd done that, or if somebody had done that to me, if I had asked someone, I would never pay them. He would get the boot out of here. But here, this is an official photo taken just minutes before this happened. I would suggest this image is made there to have as many of these satanic horn hands in the image as possible, because they're just all over the place. So
that's an awfully telling sign that the whole thing was rigged in advance.
Also, that is what I believe, because you will see also that some of the restaurants, according to people in Paris, were closed down, had not been open for a while, and the menus you see on the outside were from 2 months ago. I would say, once again, that would also give them the possibility to control the location, because they need control of all parameters. So also on the outside of the Bataclan, it's a very odd-looking building. It's painted in yellow and red, and people have pointed out that you got Freemasonry pillars. There's like the old Sinai on the facade and so on. Sometimes you can take it too far. I don't know. I'm just pointing it out.
Ole, I know you've also noticed among photographs of the purported survivors, a young man in a T-shirt that's splattered with blood speaking on a cell phone. Could you give us your observations about this photograph?
Do you know, like when you stop laughing, Jim? This is serious. Do you know when they did Boston bombing? I mean, my God, they gave it the whole everything they could when it came to blood and sticking bones, dead corpses, but that was totally diffused and debunked by researchers, showing that this is so hoax. So I think they really tried to shape up, you know, to avoid people from being able to critically decipher these photos. So here we have instead, there's no blood at all. All of these photos, thank God for them, it was on a Friday evening, so it's all of them are dark and so on. And all the bodies, there's not a single blood, a drop of blood in the street at all, or inside the cafes as far as I've been able to see, or anything, no blood. Instead, the bodies are almost like on lit de parade. They're lying there very gracefully with like blankets on top. But the blood has not gone through the blankets. They're just covered. And they, many of the people that are being rescued have exactly the same gold foil that was used at the drill in Denmark, where they also pointed out, or they had these tin foil hat in silver and gold, making jokes with us. So it's the exact same thing. Then the man that you're talking about, that's the only photo I've been able to find where there's actual blood on someone. And he's being led away. The thing is, check out his T-shirt. For one thing, it looks like somebody with a ketchup bottle or blood bottle has been squirting it on him. It goes from one side up and down. Very odd. If he was wounded like that, it would have been a very disastrous wound, because his whole body would have been damaged. Or if he had carried someone, it wouldn't have looked like that. And also, his T-shirt is inside out and back to front. Major mess up.
That's just unbelievable, Ollie. I'm looking at it. You can see the black tag from the identification of the manufacturer, and it's in the front exposed. And looking down the side, you can even see the seams from it being inside out. I guess he just had to change his shirt, turn it inside out. Holy, this is so ridiculous.
But I got one in even better for you. When there is an image on the internet and you click on that, if you look out in the browser window, you will see the URL for that specific image. Whatever it is, it will say something like blah, 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 /images, and then the name of the image. Here, on quite a few of these images of people being led away or rescued and so on, especially the ones that have been shown on CNN, the URL is something like, I think, turner.com/CNN next/ something MAPA or something like that, /assets/, and then the name of the image. Assets is the name of the folder where these images are of these people being led around looking shocked or terror. And that assets is the name that the CIA used for people in their operations.
Yes, yes, assets, yes. Company assets, absolutely.
And in Norway, I've been looking very much into the Norway terror thing that happened with the mass shooting on the island Utö and also the blowing up of the government building. And in Oslo, on one side of the government building, there were real victims. And on the other side, there were crisis actors. And on the where the real victims are, it's in one of the national TV stations. It's like tv2.no/. Then it says victims/ in Norwegian, victims/, and then the name of the image. But the ones of the crisis actors, it says tv2.no/actors/, and then the name of the images. Do you see what I'm saying? These are the things that they don't think, they're not thinking that that anyone will look into it. It's just because I'm a nerd when it comes to these things. I'm just checking everything.
Well, only they're playing the whole world for gullible saps. And, you know, most ordinary citizens just accept what they're told by their government, what they see on television. They take for granted it's accurate, especially when it's coming from so many sources. What they don't understand is the government is controlling all of those sources to make sure they have basically the same story presented from the same point of view.
And I tell you, by being gullible and by being asleep, we are co-responsible to mass murder, because it's because we are asleep that they're justified in their bombings of Syria, in all of these awful atrocities that are happening. It's just because we are accepting and saying, yeah, of course. I mean, if they shouldn't have attacked us, so because they did that, then bomb women and children and so on. Absolutely not on in my world.
So would you say that The Economist magazine, by featuring those odd Alice and the two arrows that can only be constructed as one date, namely November the 13th, 2015, and identifying the location by way of the painting, it's comparable to Chips having to approach the target he's going to assassinate before he takes him out?
Exactly. This is why these signs are out there. You know, here it is. Here it is. Nobody reacts. Okay, there you go. Do you know all of these ambulances as well? I just want to say that there's a woman who lives, she lives on Boulevard Saint-Germain, which is right in the area. And her son came home that very Friday with a note from school saying, in case of an emergency, she said that was totally out of the blue, never happened before. But it said, in the case of an emergency, don't go to the school, don't leave your home, just listen to the radio. France Bleu was the radio station, and listen for updates. Okay, so she stayed home, and many other people stayed home as well. When you look at the photos from outside these restaurants, outside the music theater and so on, where all the ambulances are and so on, check out the windows around in the area. I would say if I was the neighbor to a place where several bombs had gone off, there were all of these police cars and ambulances, fire trucks, wouldn't you turn the light on? Wouldn't you hang out the window or at least check out what's going on? No, here, more or less all of the windows are black. I would suggest the area around these things had been evacuated. That was what they did at the Copenhagen shooting, the whole street. And so on. People weren't allowed to come back for 3 days, I think, and so on. And here we are again. They need to control the area.
So all of those local residents who were required to vacate the premises would be aware of the oddity of their being required to vacate and then of the event taking place while they were absent.
That is why I would very much ask people who live there, and if they've experienced anything like this, to step forward and confirm if this is the truth. I can only say that look at the windows. They're black, all of them. Black, black, black. Then you have outside the club, the music theater, when this happened, there's a small little alley where people are, there's a filmed video. There's only one video filmed, where people are running out, some of them being shot, falling dead in the exit, and people are running up and down this little alley. It's filmed by a person on the other side of the alley who lives there. Well, who was filming it? Just by coincidence, it was a French journalist that worked for Le Monde. And that newspaper was so central in spreading all the whole Charlie Hebdo thing out there. But this, it could be a coincidence. I beg to differ, because also the guy is said to have been shot in the hand afterwards, after he had filmed this. Only one problem, that the shooters never left the building. So how did he manage to get shot in the hand when he was in a totally different building on the third floor filming down in the alleyway? Bit of a problem.
Ole, you do such a brilliant job of analysis. I'm hardly surprised that you've been besieged with requests to do interviews. I'm so pleased to have had the opportunity to interview you here with me today. Is there anything you'd like to say by way of closing about the significance of events like this and their place in the broader scheme of things?
I can only say we're only scratched on the surface. I can go on for like 2-3 hours with similar things. I would very much suggest that they want us to react emotionally and just accept whatever it is they're saying. After this happened, there's terror alert in Sweden, there's police everywhere. I mean, all of this is based on a lie, and the people in power know this. In England, the MI6, the MI5, and the GCHQ, they applied for 1,900 new jobs. That is a hell of a lot in a country that is already so under surveillance from everywhere. And every single time it's the taxpayers have to pay. And it goes on from country to country. They're so much using this because we as their enemy and hating them and attacking them. We see horrible examples of these things. And I know Muslim people here in Spain and in Sweden that they're afraid. They don't even dare to go outside. All based on absolute BS. They might prepare another one because they really try to stir it at the moment. So there might be other things on there in their timeline. So if something else happens really awful, please don't react emotionally and buy into it. Take a step back, breathe, maybe go for a walk, turn off the television. That's how they get to you, through the TV. Take a walk in the forest, hug your wife, all of these things. Sit, calm down, and start watching. Look out for signs. Listen to Jim, listen to myself, listen to other people who have devoted their life to find out what's actually going on. Before you judge, before you do something violent to your fellow human being, and before you accept innocent people being bombed and killed.
Absolutely marvelous, brilliant critique, Ollie. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my very special guest the first hour, Ollie Damagard, for being here, for offering brilliant insights about the Paris event. Stand by for the second hour with Jay Bartel, who worked for the CIA. We'll be right back.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
I'm very pleased this evening that we have new information from you about the Boston bombing. Alan, let's take it away. Let's have image one.
Now, in a way, I think Boston's a lot easier to debunk than Sandy Hook because you actually have all the images that they wanted you to see, whereas in Sandy Hook you don't have any images of inside that happened spontaneously. Here, to a certain extent, we've got some spontaneity, but we also got the official photographs as well, the official images. Now, when we looked at Sandy Hook, we found that nice book, the handbook, that showed us what the target capabilities to be exercised were, and one of them was the use of media for information distribution. Now, I think that's been concentrated on a little bit more here in Boston because of the aspect of having an open scene where somebody did, in fact, take photographs from a height. Actually, two sets of photographs were taken from somebody actually watching what was going on while the hoax, the drill was actually going on. But the important thing here is that they know that they have to control the press. So what they do, image one shows you an example of it. Now we see a bunch of press-like looking cameras, all on their expensive tripods, all up there waiting to see something happen at the Boston courthouse where Sarnoff was being tried. Or wasn't being tried, whichever way you look at it. But you'll see that none of them have any of the insignia of any of the TV stations or any media insignia on them. These are just props. But tellingly, they're behind a fence. What you do in these drills is you keep the media back. You control the media entirely. And you remember last time we looked at Sandy Hook, we saw a photograph of... actually, it was Carver, I think, and behind Carver was somebody with a video camera, and they were actually taking video of the press so that they could establish this aspect of using the media for information distribution to show that they'd actually captured that target capability. Now, the next picture... This shows us just how dumb we are because we just don't look at these things. Now, here's a novel form of medical care here where you put a bag on somebody's windpipe at one of these drills so that they might die, so that you've got a realistic corpse somewhere. If you've ever seen caregivers doing that sort of thing or allowing that sort of thing, please tell me where. This is nonsense, more nonsense. And the next... shot. These are just things that I've noticed recently. This big gorilla here is receiving instructions, performance instructions through the earpiece. And another one that's surfaced lately is image four. Somebody's taken a selfie of themselves after a bomb incident. Don't look at any of the foreground. Look at the background, which is sparse, empty. There's nothing there. From the photographs that we have elsewhere, we know that that background was actually filled with things. First off, it was filled with the fences and the flags and all the rest of that. Here it's actually sparse. There's nothing there. So we know that this photograph is a fake too. Next one, please, Charles. Now, here we go. We've got another of the players, another of the Newtown and Boston dramatic ensemble here. It's this African woman who's cuddling one of the so-called victims' parents. She's a professional hearse follower. That was her role at Sandy Hook. But when we get to Boston, let's see the next image, please, Charles. We see that she's actually come back for a return engagement, and there she is on the gurney, image seven. Not only is she on the gurney, but she also sticks a cap on and a pair of sunglasses and pretends she's a caregiver too. Now, image eight. This chappie apparently died on MH370, and he looks suspiciously like... Next shot, this chap. And when we put them together, next image, We see the likeness. Now, again, you'll have to put up with me being as dense as a brick, because the next image, which I looked at and thought, well, what's in this? I just sort of went over it. I thought, yeah, well, there was some guy who didn't have a wound, but there's a lot more in this than just that. If we go to the next image, we see the time. It's 10 to 3 there from his watch. So he's not a very, what can you call it? He's just not that wounded. We can't see any blood on his leg. We can't see any blood on his shoe. There's no blood there at all. In terms of triage, he's one of the least treatable people, but he's being treated smack on 10 to 3. While Jeff Bauman, of course, is wandering around with his legs off. So that doesn't ring true for me. Now, the next picture, we see through that guy's legs, we see a boot, but it's a boot that doesn't belong to anyone. It's not on someone. Well, how is that boot standing up? Well, the boot is standing up because it's got a prosthetic in it. One of the actors has taken the boot and the prosthetic off, put them over there, and then put on their wounded prosthetic. That's why that boot's there and it's standing up like that. Next picture. Whoever this woman is, she's identifiable by that tattoo. She was there. She knows it's a fake. Somebody may know this lady. Somebody may expose her. It all helps. All of this stuff coming out helps. Now, the next picture, and this wasn't one that I found, is blood that disappears. Now, somebody's worked out that this chap here is called Ron Brassard, and the girl that's on his other foot is apparently his daughter from my research. Now, the next one, next picture, sorry, Chance. This is the amazing Rebecca Gregory. Now, she's fantastic. She's not only got more personalities than we've got, but she's also got limbs that seem to drop off at will. The next picture shows one of her, next picture, Chance, shows one of her at the court. Now, the next picture shows image 18. Shows another Rebecca Gregory who looks a little bit different there. So does her mother. So the next image puts together 1 and 2. And we find that they're quite a bit different to each other. But the next image is even more amazing. We've got 2 Rebecca Gregories together. This is how arrogant these bastards are. They'll stick this in your face and they'll think that nobody will pick it up. Well, surely somebody's going to pick it up. And what happens if they do pick it up? What happens to these people, these actors, these fakes? Well, I think they're covered by some kind of order. I think they belong to the National Clandestine Service, and I think they've got some kind of indemnity from prosecution or any liability for anything that they do. Now, let's go to the next picture. We clearly saw that Rebecca Gregory, whoever she is, out of those two people, had a leg missing. Well, here she is with the leg still there. And there's another picture, the next one. She's definitely got a leg there. Nobody's going to lose a leg with just that kind of injury. She's got circulation in the leg. She can obviously move it by the way she's crossed her legs. But have a look at this next picture. Here she is in Halloween. Both legs, below the knee, missing. Am I making this up? No, this is stuff I got off the internet. You're being duped, people. Next one. I thought I recognized this woman here in the black and white, and I did. Next picture, please, Chance. Here she is. You remember a long time ago I said to you when we first did Boston, Jim, I said, I wonder who this lady is and why she's moving so slowly away from the bomb. Well, she's one of the crew. She's one of the National Clandestine Service actors. Next one. And she also surfaces as the woman on the right here. Next one, please, Chance. And she's together with this character here who makes an appearance and claims to be a victim and actually claims to be a male as well. I don't know how, but this is how it goes on. You just continue this farce. You bring up new people. You just put them in front of the public and you say, this is a victim. And you've got this person just claiming they are. They don't appear in any images that I've seen from Boston. And I have seen quite a lot of images. Now, the next picture is a Photoshop of two victims who actually aren't there. And the next image shows why they aren't there. And it's because the sun is giving their shadows different falling. One's got the shadow of their face falling one way and the other's got the shadow falling the other way. Now, here's some old friends in the next picture. Image 30, we've got Carlos, the Prince of Liars. And we've also got someone with him. Who is this? Next picture. It's our old friend, Alicia Hannon. Now, if you find this picture on the internet, the one of her and Carlos with the big Boston Strong flag. I mean, that looks like something out of the 1950s from the USSR to me. You only need a couple of huge, great tractors in the background, and it would look so much like a USSR propaganda film photograph. Now, the next picture shows who she is. We've seen her before. She's the Meryl Streep of the FEMA set. They throw her in when they want somebody to fill in the place of a woman. And this next chap in the next picture, Bob Lucart is his name. Now, he pretends to be a journalist. He's actually somebody who arranges these things. And the next picture shows him, that picture already shows him at Boston. He's just behind the Valverde woman in brown. But this picture I hadn't picked up until about three or four days ago, just before I sent you the pictures. There he is on the other side pretending that he's something to do with the race, the Boston race. Next picture. Now, here is a big expose. Sally Copps was both at Sandy Hook and Boston. There's a picture of her as she appeared at Sandy Hook on the right, and here she is getting to work late on the left. Next picture, please. These three photographs are of the same woman. The woman in the middle has a very large scar on her cheek. The two women either side have got prosthetics on their cheek, and she also, the woman on the extreme right has also got a prosthetic on her forehead. And you can see that because if you go and download this picture, you'll see that along her eye line, she's got wavy creases, just as you get in plastic, not as you get in skin. Nobody's got wavy creases above their eyebrow. Now, next picture. Injured, 270. I doubt if there's 27 people there on the sidewalk pretending to be injured.
Yeah, the numbers have been ridiculously inflated, Alan. How could they possibly think they could get away with that?
Haven't they? Haven't they? And do you think you can get word out of any of the Boston hospitals about the admissions for that day? You bloody well can't. Now, right down in the bottom, this is interesting, right down in the very bottom here, there's a character that we'll look at a bit later. You can't really see, you can only see his head, a tiny little head down the bottom, just between the legs of the guy that's running on the left-hand side. We'll talk about him later. Now, next image. I don't know how I missed this. The image that we see furthest from us, which is a leg, is a false leg, and some of it's been cut, and some of the wires inside have been broken, and they've fallen out of the leg. Now, the wound in front of us, that we can see the sole of the shoe there, and then we see the calf, and then we see any, that doesn't appear to have bled at all. And what it looks like is some plastic that's been ripped up with a knife, roughly. Now, here's probably the more important stuff that we get to now. image 39. Look at the way that this kid has been presented. He's actually had horns drawn on his head at the front. Do you see them?
It's ridiculous, Alan.
He's got the little devil beard. He's got hair like it's black fire or something. And why did we not get the actual pictures from the courtroom? Look behind them. There's a bunch of people, probably the public. I don't think the public were allowed in. And if they were,
this is the most ridiculous sham trial in American history, I'll tell you that.
I don't think it was even a real trial, to tell you the truth. Jim, I think this is just another aspect of the bullshit. Now, if there were people in the public gallery, as we see behind these people, surely they would have sold their stories to the papers and we would have seen them interviewed on television. I don't think there are any members of the public there, to tell you the truth. Next image shows a cartoon of a cop, possibly, rescuing a kid with blonde hair and a white jacket. That's pretty novel. Never seen that before. Haven't seen that in any of the images that I've looked at. But have a look at this complete rubbish that we see in the next picture. This is a cartoon of a cartoon. The witness, whoever it is, and she can only be a witness, she can't be anything else, is portrayed as a cartoon, but there's some evidence behind her that's a cartoon. What is it supposed to show? It doesn't show anything. It's a bunch of squiggles. No court in the world would present this thing as evidence of anything. The next picture. According to the story, Sarnoff made this sign after he'd been arrested and was in custody. Who the hell would put that up as evidence? Why would there be a need for that picture in court? It wouldn't find its way into court. Next picture, please. And this is the culprit. This is the liar who made those cartoons, who knows there was no court case there, and who came up with these cartoons as part of the FEMA exercise. It's a big, long exercise. It lasts a long time. Next picture. This lady was caught at Boston in the slow-mo, which I arranged for to view the video of the – it's called the Crisis Actor Late for Work. It was available on YouTube. Anybody can get it and slow it down. If you get a copy of VLC Player and slow it down to as slow as you can possibly get, it shows you lots of faces that you didn't know were there. Well, this lady, next picture, turns out to be this lady. The top picture, she's got a nose done. The nose is altered there. This is arrogant. This is saying, look, this is how we do it, stupid. Work it out. They always have to do this. You had Ollie going down on about karma. They've always got to put in front of your face exactly how stupid you are.
Alan, aren't those the two from the Virginia shooting?
They are indeed, Jim. Now,
well, she was supposed to have been killed, of course, but here she looks rather cheerful for a corpse.
Yeah, it does indeed. Have a look at the image 40. That's what a real nose looks like. Now, next one. Remember we had a look at this guy, Dracula? The guy with Lanza, Ryan Lanza. When we last looked at Sandy Hook, I said, look, there's this guy who's following around the Lanzas. I'm not sure. I wouldn't bet the farm on it, but I think that might be him with a bit of a wig on. And it's a little bit later, so he may be a bit skinnier. It may be. I wouldn't put money on it, but it may be. Now, the next picture is of a woman I haven't seen in any of the pictures that I've looked at from Boston bombing. a woman called Sidonia. And this is on one of those channels, one of those YouTube sites where you, not YouTube, sorry, internet sites where you go and start up a fund for someone. Now, this woman's supposed to have had her leg blown off from just above the knee, I think. And somebody set up a fund for her, and it got her $400,000. And lo and behold, the person who set up the fund has got the surname of Rousseau, just like the teacher that was killed, Lauren Rousseau, and the mother, Terry Rousseau. Next picture, please.
Wasn't her car supposed to have been involved, Alan?
That's the one, Jim. The car was supposed to have been up at the house and at the school. Now, we're too busy watching this person who's supposed to have been, had their clothes shredded by an explosion. Note too, that person has got no injuries of any kind. We shouldn't be watching them. We always do, I do anyway, because I'm so dumb. You always watch what you're supposed to in the picture. It's supposed to be capturing an object. Keep your eyes on the fat guy. Let's see the next picture. Well, here's what's happening. Somebody's getting something out of the fat guy's backpack. My money's on it being a blood sachet or something similar. Have we got the next pictures, Chance? Now, I've looked at this so much and I've missed something all the time. Now, Jim, in future, when I say I'm a dunce, don't contradict me, okay? This woman has got no bottom right, left leg, sorry, no bottom left leg. She can't have. If she had, it would have to show, we would have to be able to see it from the angle at which she's sitting. We can't see it there at all. It's not there. She hasn't got, at that stage before the bombing, she didn't have either, a bottom left leg. We'll see her picture again in next picture, 52, please, Charles. Here she is. It's this woman. Let's have that.
Yeah, next this is a fairly famous picture. She is in several, supposed to have broken tibia and fibia and you know, she's supposed to be, you know, in immense pain, but she's showing no pain at all.
Yep.
There's another photograph showing professional athletes who have suffered minor versions of these injuries, and they're on the ground wincing in pain.
Yep. It's nonsense. Next picture, please, Charles. There she is, close up. Now, that's supposed to be this girl. Next picture. Now, I'm going to speak some American here. That is not the same broad. That is not the same woman. It's supposed to be Rebecca Gregory. It is not her. This woman, well, that now means we've got three Rebecca Gregories. Next picture. This guy. He ran from the explosion. This is about less than, I should think less than 5 seconds after the explosion. Never seen him interviewed. Never heard anything about him. Next picture. Weirdest of the weird. Look at that woman's thumb. If you go and look at some of the high definition pictures of her hand, she has the weirdest hand you have ever seen. She has fingers about 6 inches long. I don't know what's going on there, but it's not natural. Next picture. Okay, again, 270 injured. Where? Next picture. This guy has actually got a false nose, glasses, and something over his ear.
Yeah, it looks like a false ear too, yes.
I think that might be some kind of communication device that they might have been trying out just to see how it worked. Next picture. This is a face to look for in the future. He was walking towards the bomb site, when everybody else was running away. Do you remember we looked at the picture of two guys in white hoods who were also just standing watching? This is one of the National Clandestine Service operatives too, I think. Next picture. Okay. Now this one, haven't been able to follow it up anymore. A Bruce Mendelson, the first responder, and one of the parents at Sandy Hook, they look extremely similar. In fact, if you're in a murder case and there was a case of mistaken identity with the perpetrator, you wouldn't blame somebody on a dark night for seeing these two and thinking that they're the same person. That needs to be looked into a little bit more. I can't find any more pictures of Bruce Mendelson, though. Next picture. Here we are. Somebody, and God bless them, and that's from an atheist, picked up this picture. It's an arm using something that looks like a portable smoke machine.
That's fascinating because Nathan Foulkes, who's a Hollywood producer, director, said he believed the smoke had been produced by a smoke machine.
Yeah. If you watch the video, and there's only one video, and it was produced by the Boston paper that was covering the event. And the cameramen seem to be doing everything they can do not to show you what's happening. But what they do show you is that all of the smoke at the first explosion went up in the air and away. But then you can show other pictures that show smoke along the road and smoke hanging around as if it's a fog. And Chance has got us to the next picture there. Look at these two cameramen. They've got all of these other fake crisis actors in the way so that you can't actually see what's going on. And there's a good reason that you don't want to see what's going on. And it's here in image 63. We see the man who lets the bomb off by pulling the cord. Do you see that black thing down from him?
Yes.
That's a cord. They've probably got some kind of a rip cord there, similar to what they used to have on old-fashioned cannons to fire the cannon. That's probably the man who started the ball rolling there. Well, we got through those pretty quickly, Jim.
You did, Alan. You were going at a house of fire pace.
Now, yeah, well, somebody complained about me putting people to sleep. I mean, you know, one of the trolls said the best thing that truthers can do is watch you because they'll fall asleep. So I thought I'd try and spruce it up a little. Now, let me add, another point about what Oli was doing in the video that we just watched. He's doing that classic thing. Do you remember I said the way to breach this narrative is to concentrate on chronology and incident? The chronology and the incident make up the narrative. If you breach either of them, you don't have a true narrative. Now, that's what Ollie's doing. Ollie's looking at the fact that Wembley Stadium has got red, white and blue lights an hour before anything's happened, stuff like that. But it's not only the incident itself that you have to look at. It's what happens well after the incident. On social media, we looked a while ago at the way that Prism has got YouTube, it's got Twitter, it's got all of the social media connections to keep things going, to make sure that everybody thinks that there was, say, a bomb at Boston or there was a shooting at Sandy Hook. Now, during the week, I had an interesting exchange, initially with someone calling themselves Mark or Mike Green, who said he had a cousin at Sandy Hook. And after 2 hours, I couldn't get the name out of him, what the cousin was. And then he disappeared. And then he came back with a changed name, Snow Leopard. But this time he came back and said, would you like to give some money to the Sandy Hook Victims Fund? So by this time I was well and truly pissed off. And I said, look, I'm going to report you to YouTube. You don't have a cousin there. You won't give me the name. And now you're trying to solicit money from me. That's legal. That's fraud. And then he came back and said that his uncle was the state attorney general for Connecticut. And I said, well, no, that's bullshit, because I've actually emailed him and he said the case is closed and he won't talk to me anymore. He knows me. He's got my email. So I don't think he's your uncle at all. And then he just came back and said, I'm extremely sorry. So I don't know if he was actually a government troll or just an idiot or what. But the let me tell you, the difference between the two, trolls and government idiots, or government trolls and idiots, the difference is not very great. There have been people on your blog site, for example, that give themselves away. Now, I said last time that the way to expose an op is to ask them their hair color and to ask them what their Christian name is, and you won't get an answer. Nobody in their right mind on YouTube would not give those two things to you to prove that they are real.
Now, listen, we got about 20 minutes. You read the last few blogs I published on jamesfetzer.blogspot.com, right?
Yeah, I did.
You know the history of how I was invited to do an interview with Inside Edition and then wound up inside what appeared to be a basement operation for an intelligence agency, and how he was grilling me, provoking me. He wasn't introducing the television show. It was a pure intel op, and I believe he was making an assessment of how strong our evidence was. And when he discovered how strong it was, I believe he issued an advisory that the book needed to be pulled. And of course, the following day, it was pulled with no reason or explanation. It passed their guidelines initially on the 22nd of October, Alan. If they were going to pull it, they'd have to have reasons to pull it. They'd have to be able to notify me of the reasons at the time they pulled it. What happened is they understood the book was too good, too explosive, blows the Obama administration out of the water. The whole Sandy hoax is exposed, and therefore they took down the book, and now they're trying to come up with reasons to explain why. But it's artificially, it's superficially, it's on the surface absurd, Alan. It's a clear intel op to get the book down.
It is, but it's a stupid one, because we've now, you and I had that chat and we decided it would go free to anybody who wanted it. So they've shot themselves in the foot. I mean, there's no better way to distribute something than to make it free. And I think if we have trouble with shall I just say the next book?
And Alan, I'm being interviewed all over the place. The night that it happened, I was on with Jeff Rentz, and of course you were on with me at the time when I announced that we were putting the book out for free. I've been interviewed by American Free Press. I was interviewed by Joyce Riley on the Power Hour. I've been interviewed by Michael Rivera. I've got a host of interviews lined up. I mean, it's blowing up in their face, Alan.
It is. Of course it will. You can't. I've said this so often, Jim. You cannot, as a government, win an information war. It is stupid to try to. Now,
you know, one of the complaints about the book was that, of course, it's in black and white. The photographs are in black and white, so you can't see their detail. But by releasing the book now, you can see every photograph in color. They're perfectly clear. You can expand them. You can look at greater details.
Yeah.
And Alan, I've had several people comment to me, instead of having maybe 4,000 or 6,000 readers, maybe people who actually bought the book, we're going to have 40 million readers because it's on the internet and everyone wants to know what in the hell is going on.
Well, the first thing they want to know what the bother's all about. And then, of course, everybody likes something for free. And I think at this stage, you won't hear anything from the mainstream media about the book at all. They're trying to bury it. But look, I keep telling you, Jim, these people are dumb.
Alan, I had a press release sent out to 22,000 media outlets in the United States, radio stations, TV stations, large ones, small ones, daily papers, large papers, over 22,000. The fellow who did it said it was perhaps the largest mailing ever made in the history of the United States.
And let me tell you what happened. You didn't get back one professional group asking about the book.
No, but we did get a lot of automatic replies about people out of the office suggesting they actually did get through But yes, no one has asked me for an interview, Alan. It's simply dumbfounding. It's an absolute test of the extent to which the American media is on total lockdown.
It is. I think myself, probably what's happening now is that you have some form of DHS manual that's sent to media outlets, and it lists what they should not involve themselves in. And I think what probably happened when you volunteered yourself for this interview was that they just wanted to test your measure. They'd have seen the book. They knew how bad it was for them, but they just wanted to see what they could do to you. They wanted to rattle your cage. If they had have rattled your cage, they could then have presented you as the madman that put up this whole thing, etc. And you did a splendid job. You just kept, you know, reasoned and quiet. Well done. I'd have just probably ended up swearing or something. But, that's another thing that you can do to ops as well. If you use really foul language with them, that puts them off. I know, because I tried it this week. But it has been a very, very interesting week. I've had emails to Sophia Smallstorm, aborted, sent back with no address, and lots of interesting things happening on YouTube. But I can say I've got a list of about 8 ops that I want to mention. Philip Franklin is still there, carrying on, pretending that he's not DHS. He is. We've got Big Nash, he's still there. We've got a new one called Jay Yo-Yo, who does all of this, the Jews must be destroyed, instead of looking at world Zionism as the real enemy. And, of course, we've got your old friend Aspartame, who actually goes by the name of Apollonius Apollonia, and I think it may be his real name, Dennis Chamberlain. We've also got Snow Leopard and probably Mark Green as well. I'm going to keep a watch on people who say things about Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing. And I'm going to try and draw them out just so that they can be exposed. I know it's a work of art.
Chance, could you possibly go to jamesfetzer.blogspot.com and see if you could pull up the image of the Nancy Lanza bedroom and the image of the SWAT vehicle there with the four, you know, undamaged windows from classroom 10. Is there a chance you could pull those up so Alan and I could talk about them? Alan, I think those are two of the most absolutely damaging forms of proof that we have available. I mean, you have the Nancy Lanza bedroom, and there's some red stuff on the bed, but it's not blood. I've suggested several times it may be raspberry jelly. There's this wooden, you know, chest at the bottom that has papers on it that, as you have observed, are the evaluation forms, which we find in so many other photographs. And then in their haste, they overlook the moving pad, the blue moving pad beneath the left leg. And, you know, Alan, in the book, you can't see the blue moving pad. But in the PDF now, everyone can see it in vivid color.
Yeah, it's all shoddy, Jim. It's all shoddy.
Yeah, but the fantastic thing, the point I'm making, Alan, is that by banning the book and releasing it as a PDF, people can now see the photographs in great detail up close and personal.
Yes, yeah, they can. There's another so-called truther, a guy called Political Hillbilly. Have you heard of him, Jim?
Yes.
Even when I agree with him, he argues with me. I just can't get him to take yes for an answer. I think there's something just a bit strange about that one. I think he might be in the Rebecca category.
And then, of course, the sensational Exhibit 26 from all the 50 photographs about the school, where we have the SWAT vehicle there. You can see the four unbroken windows for Classroom 10. The flag is at full mast. Crime scene tape is up for a crime that has not yet been committed. Yeah. And Wayne Carver is there waiting for his portable mortuary tent. I mean, well, Alan, that one is devastating.
I think I've worked out the chronology, Jim. I went to the police site and I downloaded yesterday all of the images, and I looked through all of them again. And what they did was had the mortuary tent there at the same time as they were filling up the school. The mortuary tent wasn't there on the day. It didn't have any corpses put in it. It was there when they took the photo op of the inside. It was a rainy day when they took
the photo. We could see the reflection in the glass.
Yeah, yeah. But I've also got photos of the mortuary tent itself there on the same day that it rained. It didn't rain on the day of the incident, in inverted commas. Now, what they also did in some more photographs that I told you I was a dunce. I don't see these things when I go through them first. They also, because they took these photographs to set up a December event, they took photographs and they added CGI of frost on the top of some of the cars. But it was raining. So not only did they have frost on the top of the car, but they had raindrops on the side of the car. Now, if you've ever seen that, tell me where. I've never seen that. If it's freezing, the rain is going to be snow or sleet. It is not going to be rain and fall on cars as raindrops. These people do not think about what they do, Jim.
Alan, what's your thought about the sequence I went through beginning Wednesday, being contacted by Inside Edition? I have, by the way, written to Inside Edition and explained what happened to seek if they knew or didn't know, would deny or affirm their involvement. But it seems to me they were serving as a cover for an intel op.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think just as these operations are set in place by the National Clandestine Service, I think they've got the follow-up. If you go to their own site, they tell you how they mix it with Hollywood, with media outlets. They just continue the bullshit. They do not want this exposed. I think the easiest one to expose is not Sandy Hook. I think it's the Boston bombing.
Oh, I agree completely. The Boston bombing is totally amateurish, Alan. There's no question about it. But tell me what you think about the sequence that happened this week. You know, first with Inside Edition, then this pseudo interview, which was really a provocation, and then the pulling of the book after the book had already been approved. I mean, we had sold.
It's a bit coincidental, isn't it?
Yeah, it's causally related, Alan. There's no question about it. And then the book was selling so well, you know, it was selling nearly 500 copies in less than a month.
Jim, do you know why it's causally related?
Tell me, Alan.
Because Carney now works for Amazon. Jay Carney, White House spokesman, now works for Amazon.
Really?
Yep.
Really? Yep. And Jeff Bezos is a Bilderberger and also owns the Washington Post, Alan, if you can believe that.
Oh, I do. I would believe it.
Jay Carney is now at Amazon, so Jay Carney thought he was protecting Obama by pulling it.
I think so, yeah. Now,
it's going to turn out to be one of the greatest blunders, political blunders of the 21st
century. Jay Carney was a complete klutz. Jay Carney, if you ever watched him, he was just a complete klutz. He was a glove puppet for Obama. Every time Obama fucked something up, stick Jay Carney out there to explain, in fact, how it was a very good decision. And now they've got a worse guy called Josh Earnest, who's a complete bullshitter. You can't get a straight word out of him. I was watching one of the congressional hearings with this Loretta Lynch, your federal attorney general. If she's not a crook, I don't bloody know who's not. She couldn't answer. She couldn't lie in bed straight, let alone answer a question straight. A complete liar protecting the administration. She's supposed to be an impartial legal officer. She is not.
Alan, do you not agree that this was one of the greatest political blunders in recent history to ban the book when I was able to release it free? So now we'll have 40 million readers instead of 4,000.
I do. And I also think that we're an incredible pair of dunces for not thinking of doing that in the first place.
What do you mean? Releasing the book for free?
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. I think the way it played out is more significant, Alan, because it shows it satisfied Amazon's standards. And now if you publish a book at variance with the government's position on anything, they can pull your book.
Well, Jim, how do we get now something from Amazon saying how we breached their conditions?
Yeah, well, I haven't got it yet, Alan. They haven't sent it to me. And they had to know the conditions that were breached before they pulled the book. It would be absurd otherwise.
Yeah. Our internet connection has just become unstable, Jim. I might get kicked off the air.
Has it?
Yeah.
Well, I'll put back on my earphones, but it should be okay. It should be okay, Alan.
I had a nice big sign just flash up, but it's unstable.
The speaker is not coming through my ears. That's why I took them off. I realize now the speaker is simply coming directly from the computer.
I just had a sign flash up that the internet connection was unstable.
Yeah, but I've had that before too, Alan. That doesn't mean anything.
Perhaps it's mentioning Jay Carney that did it.
Well, that could be. That could be. That could be. I'll have to figure out how to get my sound coming back through my earphones, because somehow during this meeting it's no longer happening.
What we should ask people to do is to get the book, download it, print it up if they want a copy of it, read it, and then send that copy off to Jason Chaffetz.
Alan. I already mailed him a copy of the goddamn book. Now, printing it out is 425 pages.
I want him to have 50 copies of the book. I think the guy is genuine.
All right.
I want him to be inundated with it. And I also want somebody to ask what the EPA police were doing at Sandy Hook. In the first place, who knew that there were an EPA police anywhere? And what are they doing turning up at a crime that's not part of EPA law?
Yeah. I apologize to Chance for even asking him for looking for those images. We simply didn't realize we'd have this time to talk about this sequence of events.
Oh, that's because I was...
It's getting a huge amount of attention, Alan, a huge amount of attention.
Well, there is still a lot on Sandy Hook that I haven't disclosed.
Yeah, but I'm just saying what we have out there is more than enough to blow apart the official narrative. And now Alan's getting a huge amount of attention. It would not have had they not banned it.
Oh, it's true. That is true. But it's like Sophia said, how do you get people to read it?
People need to read it to find out what the hell the controversy is all about, Alan.
Hopefully.
And it's loaded with pictures. Americans love pictures, Alan.
Well, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
So I think we've turned the corner on this. We've blown Obama out of the water, not to mention the governor of Connecticut, the Connecticut State Police, the medical examiner.
By the way, Daniel Malloy, do you know he can't read and write?
I know he's illiterate. I was dumbfounded when I heard that, Alan.
I didn't believe it. And you told me.
That's absolutely incredible. He's illiterate. They got a governor of Connecticut who is illiterate.
Yeah. And do you know what he did? He recommended the Sudensky report as the official version. He said he'd read it. He can't bloody read. How could he read it? What did somebody read it to him? How did they know that he wasn't just being read the bloody menu or something? If he can't read.
That's wonderful. That's a wonderful point. Alan, the suggestion has come to me that it wasn't actually a CIA operation, but that it was the 411th Civil Affairs Battalion of the U.S. Army, which is located in Danbury. And as you well know, Sudensky was the Danbury State's attorney in composing the Sandy Hook report. I bet it was done by this 411th Civil Affairs Battalion.
Well, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, because they would have an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, with the National Clandestine Service, DHS, FEMA. And they wouldn't do anything without the say-so of the Clandestine Service. This organization is running your country, and I think there's still the Bush influence there. And I think this idea of getting Hillary Clinton back into the White House, please, Bill's doormat back in the White House? Are you kidding me? What are you Americans, you amnesiacs or something? Jesus.
I'll tell you, for all the controversy that Donald Trump is generating, I think he's got a great chance of winning the election. The American people are so sick of professional politicians and being lied to, they'll take a Donald Trump who occasionally makes an honest mistake over a politician who's slick but lying to them.
A lot of people might even think, let's put the cat amongst the pigeons. And he might be the cat.
Well, Trump has been blowing apart all the best laid plans of the Republican National Committee. He's just making mincemeat of the other candidates.
He is. And in a way, the people in power would like that, because that would entirely overshadow Rand Paul, who is a very strict constitutionalist.
Yeah, I like Rand Paul on a lot of different grounds.
Oh, yeah, me too.
He upset me tremendously when he opposed the Iran deal. I mean, Alan, for God's sake, our own intelligence agencies concluded in 2007 that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons. The Mossad arrived at the same conclusion in 2012. And the sanctions we have been imposing are war crimes under the Geneva Conventions of 1949, Article 33, because they're a form of collective punishment.
Well, giving that ability to Iran is really about American companies like GE being able to supply the things that will be needed for a nuclear industry. So that side doesn't arise.
Well, Iran's running a peaceful nuclear program. I think the American nuclear industry may be upset about it because they can provide fuel rods to third world countries cheaper than can the American industry.
They can, and they can also probably supply better quality installations than the Russians can. And I think you'll find probably GE's hand is in this somewhere, in this decision. I don't think it's just an extremely political one. I always think there's money behind these things. And I think you'll find somebody has been arranging a contract for installation of nuclear equipment in Iran well before this decision was made, well before.
Well, Alan, it's, as always, a great pleasure to have you on the show again. I can't thank you enough for another excellent presentation. And I'm looking forward to future interviews with you, my friend.
I must admit, Jim, most of this stuff that we look at, I'm quite funny about it. I'm quite amused by most of it. But I guarantee you in the future, we've got one coming up that is nothing, there's nothing funny about it.
Well, Alan, I look forward to that. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest, Alan William Powell, for the second hour, and all of you for watching.